You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, as Prime Minister Mark Carney and the Liberal government in Ottawa prepares to claw back emissions targets, dozens gathered in Smithers this past week to stand in solidarity with the Draw the Line rallies across Canada. Draw the Line saw tens of thousands of people rallied in support of peace worldwide and for the climate and humanitarian justice, according to organizers. Rallies were held in more than 70 communities, and in Smithers, the message was loud and clear: protect the environment and people's health. People gathered in front of the Smithers Courthouse calling out the federal and provincial governments about their soft approach to ensuring the health of communities and emissions monitoring as flaring from new LNG projects increase. Today, we speak with Sarah Newton from the Smithers Climate Action Group about why they are drawing the line now. And we hear from Dr. Sally Harvey from CAPE about why more comprehensive and long-term health studies are needed to better understand gas flaring impacts on human health. Stay with us.
My name is Sarah Newton. I'm in Smithers, British Columbia, the Gitindin clan of the Wet'suwet'en. I'm proud to be here. I'm a volunteer with Smithers Climate Action, and I'm on the Committee for Action on Social Justice with the BC Teacher Federation.
Great, Sarah. Maybe tell me a little bit about the event today. There are 50 of these events going on across the country. Draw the line. Why are we drawing the line?
We are drawing the line because it's a time in history where there's an intersectionality between all kinds of people who have valid concerns that are actually life-threatening, and they all have one commonality, and to me that's government in action, actually two, government in action and corporate greed.
Here in Smithers, there's been a long history in this region trying to push back against a lot of big fossil fuel projects and whatnot. Yeah. What's the message today? You mentioned a couple of things there, and also the work that you've done in community already. So what's the message that you're trying to get across to governments and corporations today?
Okay, for governments, corporations, and the everyday person, there are ways of doing things better that are being done around the world. We just need to pick them up. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. There is a way for sustainable resource extraction. There is a way for tradespeople to have jobs that are fulfilling and pay well so they can feed their families. We can have all these things. I oftentimes look at fish farming. It's done differently in Northern Europe. We could do that. There are different ways of logging, different ways of having value-added wood products. There's different ways to have energy that isn't greenwashing or owned by foreign countries with our energy. So there are other ways to do things that protect the environment, respect indigenous rights, and are good for the people. And I want our government not to bow to corporate lobby.
I know, sir, we've talked about this before, but there's a couple of groups that you mentioned that you're involved with. Tell me a little bit about that involvement and what's going on, as you mentioned, the day-to-day. You know, this is a Saturday. This is a march, a rallying kind of for the community to bring attention to this. But what kind of goes on after this? You know, what do people need to do after this, knowing that, you know, a lot of this business is personally out of our hands? You know, these are governments, these are businesses, companies that are doing this type of work. So what comes after this?
Right. So this one rally, even though there's more than 60 across Canada, is not going to be the one and only. We're going to have to keep going in a compassionate, peaceful way to elicit change from our government. And we can not worry about putting a sweater on and turning our heating down. You know, like, that's great, that's a low-hanging fruit, but yes, in fact, it's policy change, and every dollar we spend is a vote for what we believe in, for sure. But I also believe in pressure in government, because people go to the government to complain, and they're very loud, and the people on the other side, like, who want to see change, need to also be loud in a nice way, because the corporate lobby is very, very powerful. So I would say that, and With the British Columbia Teacher Federation, we have a climate justice working group that works closely with equity-seeking groups. And a lot of that goes around just respectful treatment of others and looking at the bigger picture. So, yeah, it's a long battle, and Smithers Climate Action, I'm new to that group. I moved here a few years ago, but they've been bringing in speakers to really try and educate people to the bigger picture, and to see them step up to an event like this is just showing where people are at. No one really wants to spend their Saturday at a rally. There's nothing to be gained financially for us. There's no hidden agenda other than justice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a lot of people, you know, who may be at some of these rallies, especially in bigger cities, it's quite removed from places where resource development and fossil fuels are developed. Here in the Northwest, we have just seen the approval from the provincial government for another gas pipeline for the Lithium's LNG facility. There are several other LNG facilities that are being built on the BC coast. There's also talk of reviving an oil pipeline, oil export, you know, here in the Northwest as well. There's a lot of people who are objecting to these things, but the government is pushing them through, the NDP government, which is ran on campaigns of, you know, being more environmentally conscious. You know, what are you trying to get across to them, knowing that, you know, here's another gas pipeline that's in the works and all these other projects going on? It sometimes doesn't sound like they're getting the message. So how do you kind of elevate what you're doing here today?
It's all about solidarity. I feel like I feel quite bizarre being here talking to you when the Wet'suwet'en have been fighting this battle for decades and we are finally noticing. But that's where the power lies, in solidarity. When you look at our brochure, the groups that are coming together, we need more and more solidarity. In my little speech, I'll talk about it has worked in the past. In South Korea, en masse, people walked out a few months ago unhappy with what was happening to their democracy. In the Philippines in the late 80s, en masse, the Philippine population came out because of a dictatorship, right? Like, it's my expertise is in forestry, and I moved from Revelstoke, where we did, with peaceful protest, get a logging company to back down from old growth logging, and not by shaming workers, but by the company seeing they didn't have the social contract in the community, and they actually said that, because we had everybody speaking out wanting better logging practices. Up here, it's a bit different. Like, the developments you named are huge. And I feel like, I'm no expert and I could be wrong, but I feel those corporations and the government are leveraging the poverty of Indigenous nations. They've got a rock and a hard place, those nations. And who can fault them for trying to better their situation? At the same time, they deserve to have their situation better. They deserve to have jobs in industry and extraction that's done on their terms. So these, Chief Namok said it the best when Amnesty International was here, I believe that was a rally. He said, this is just the beginning, you know, with action against foreign-owned corporations. If you look up Blackstone Group, they're, you know, an American lobby that's been funding Trump, and they're behind a lot of these projects in Canada, and people don't know that, and it's wrong.
Maybe, sir, just the last thing for you. Maybe tell me what's going to happen today. Where are we at, and what are people going to do here in Smithers?
We are going to have some speeches from people with some expertise in various areas of climate impacts on health, on our citizens, on our Indigenous groups. We're going to touch on the other aspects of just intersectionality and unity. We have a line that we've drawn that's we're going to stand beside for a picture. We're going to be walking down to Rotary Park by Main and Highway 16. And we also have all the addresses of our members of parliament, and we have pens and postcards so people can write their elected officials who are supposedly elected by us for us. And people will be writing respectful, nice postcards, which are, in fact, free to mail in Canada to your member of parliament. So we'll be doing a big writing bee.
Right. Yeah. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
When do we want action? When do we want it?
10 years ago.
What do we want?
Action.
When do we want it?
10 years ago.
What do we want?
Action.
When do we want it?
10 years ago.
I'm Sally Harvey. I'm from Smithers, and I'm a doctor. I'm a radiologist at the hospital.
Maybe you can tell me a little bit about your perspective on some of what you said there. You're a doctor, and you see this type of impact from a different angle. So what was the message you were trying to get across to the crowd here today?
Well, I was here speaking as a member of this community, but also as a member of CAPE BC, which is the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment. So we've just recently launched a campaign that's just really trying to connect for people the health impacts of the liquid natural gas expansion. And in particular, I think it's important to talk about it for Northern British Columbians. So in general, the health of Northerners is not as good as the health of our Southern counterparts. And then the issue of fracked gas expansion is going to worsen that on a couple of levels. First of all, through climate change in general is affected by expansion, by any kind of fossil fuel industry, especially its expansion. And, you know, the government keeps talking about how it's the greenest form and they're going to be using hydroelectric power to fuel the compressor stations. But there are a number of health impact studies of areas that live around fracking sites all over the world that have shown significant negative health impacts. Mm. And so these are well documented. So what we're asking for from CAPE is for the government to mount an independent cumulative health assessment of the effects of this industry from start, so where it's pulled out of the ground, all across the pipelines to where it's exported through these facilities. And then when it's ultimately burned and it contributes to climate change. So people need to understand that this is going to affect climate change in general. The wildfires, the smoke, all of these things exacerbate asthma, they exacerbate chronic diseases, heart disease, and these increase people's visits to the emergency departments. And then that increases people's wait times. You know, and that increases physician and nurse burnout, all of these things. And so, yeah, anecdotally, during these wildfire smoke times, do I read more x-rays and do we perform more CT scans on people with breathing difficulties? I think so. Has there been an independent study documenting that? No, but anecdotally for sure. And I mean, Dr. Hicks was just speaking right now. They're functioning in Hazelton at 200%, their emergency department. So she's in the emergency department all the time. She cannot see her regular patients. And once they get a 1,500-person man camp, I mean, the number of assaults, the number of overdoses, the number of just 50 to 60-year-old men working at these camps, not from the community, showing up for prescription renewals, this is all going to have huge effects on the people living locally along these pipelines. So in my mind, it just seems like I think that the health of Northerners is being sacrificed for this goal of LNG expansion, because for sure the billionaires that own this don't care, but the government doesn't seem to care either. You know, and I understand that there are many nations that have signed on, but unfortunately there are many Indigenous nations and hereditary chiefs that haven't. And I think that the government needs to respect not only the health, like this health is going to affect all of us. So they need to respect the needs and rights of not just the people that sign on to these extractive resources, but to the people that don't. And they're not respecting that. So anyway, the bottom line is, the horse has left the barn. This is happening. But if we can at least convince the government to mount a cumulative independent health assessment into the impacts of this, and not just like physical health, but cultural health, environmental health, the whole thing. Because when you speak to people that I've spoken to, MLA Larry Neufeld, who is the MLA for the Dawson Creek area, and what he has said is, oh no, it's so safe. Our oil and gas workers are all wearing badges. We're using recycled water now. But I mean, that means that these workers are being exposed to the same toxic water over and over again, not to mention that it can leak out of the containment sites. But, you know, what are the cumulative effects of somebody working in that industry? Sure, they've got a badge that's monitoring whatever gas they're exposed to. But then what's monitoring, you know, their exposure to the contaminated water over and over again? there are known effects of, there's increased preterm labor, there's birth defects are associated with these sites, but has anyone actually looked into it in the Fort St. John and Dawson Creek area? No, they're not.
But one thing I just want to touch upon really quick, you know, what was mentioned there was the loss of trust in government. Mm-hmm. And government is going to listen to taxpaying citizens and hear your concerns and take some sort of action. It doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of trust that people believe in this crowd. What's your take on that? How do you feel about whether or not government is actually hearing, or that there's a mutual trust here that you can bring these concerns to the government expecting some sort of action?
I don't have that trust. I have lost that trust. I feel like if you look at the relationships between these oil lobbyists and our government and the number of visits that they have and the friendships and the back and forth and the fact that, you know, people that worked in these oil companies and now are working in government, we had to work so hard as an organization, CAPE, to get in to see Minister Dix. But he has been seeing these oil and gas lobbyists like weekly, whereas CAPE was asking for months and months to get an audience. And it wasn't until they had this press release, and it so happened that one of the people from CAPE ran into David Eby socially, and he somehow, after this conversation, managed to get an appointment with Minister Dix on Monday. As far as I'm concerned, he just considers us a nuisance. He sort of sat and listened, had really nothing much to say. Someone took notes while, you know, Indigenous land defenders spoke, health experts spoke. So I don't have trust. I believe that they have decided that this is what they're going to do, and they're singular-minded about it. And they are ignoring all the evidence that's there. And they're putting so many subsidies into this industry. And there's no chance for a just transition because there's nothing else for people to do. And then that's the other thing. Like, we live here, right? We live here. We live with people that work in the oil and gas industry. And so, you know, it becomes very divisive because we're saying things like, you know, it's not like I'm saying that they are wrong or they're doing the wrong thing. They are putting food on the table for their families. But I am certain that people would rather find a way to put food on the table for their families that didn't damage their health. And I think that there's no opportunity for that because there's just really the government isn't prioritizing it at all. They are, if you look at the amount of money that they have put for renewable transition, like true transition resources, for renewable resources over the past decade, it's stayed completely the same. Mm. And fossil fuel subsidies are double what they're putting into renewable subsidies, and they're increasing every year. So I have no trust, no.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists. I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.